Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Eating Disorder Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Kate Harner. Please go ahead.
Welcome, and thank you for calling in to Cigna's 2013 Eating Disorder Awareness Series. My name is Kate Harner, and I'm a care manager on the Eating Disorder team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call today, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of the conference, you will be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions of today's speaker. A handout for today's presentation is available online at www.cigna.com/eatingdisorders. Halfway down the page, under the heading Current Topics, you will see the link for today's presentation in blue, entitled How to Manage Pregnancy and Eating Disorders. Again, visit the Awareness Series page online at www.cigna.com/eatingdisorders. Halfway down the page, under the heading Current Topics, you will see the link for today's presentation in blue, entitled How to Manage Pregnancy and Eating Disorders. Please also notice the blue square in the top section of the page that you may click on to sign up for future seminars. It is not required that you sign up in order to attend the monthly presentations. However, if you choose to sign up, you will receive email reminders each month. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Denise Steyer. Dr. Steyer is the clinical director of the IOP and PHP programs at the Center for Eating Disorders and Self-Injury with Alexian Brothers Health System. Today, she'll be sharing information with us on managing pregnancy and eating disorders. Welcome, Dr. Steyer.
Thank you, and thank you, everybody, for joining us today. This is a topic that isn't discussed too often and usually will throw the family members, those with an eating disorder, and even sometimes the treatment team into a little bit of a tizzy, because all of a sudden they're surprised and really don't understand or don't know what to do. So I thought that this, when Kate and I were discussing this topic, I thought this was a great topic for us to be discussing. You can feel free to follow along on the PowerPoint that Kate spoke about. And from time to time, I'll mention what slide I'm on just in case you want to make sure that you're online with me here. Eating disorders are rampant. We have eating disorders going across the country, all age groups, and now they're occurring at younger and younger ages. I think we recently had a 7-year-old not too long ago with an eating disorder. So eating disorders are out there. They affect approximately 7 million American women each year. I find that number to be staggering, and I work in the field, primarily with eating disorders. When you look at all the psychological disorders that are out there for women in childbearing ages, it amazes me that anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa, both eating disorders, are the most common. So not only are we going through our developmental formative years, entering our adulthood, we have 7 million American women struggling with eating disorders as well during childbearing age. Another number that I found was very staggering and amazing was that 1 in 14 pregnant women have an eating disorder. 1 in 14. Before we go any further talking about complications and treatment, I thought it was really important to address two myths that I hear quite common and that we work with dispelling with the patients that we work with. Oftentimes, women with eating disorders believe that they cannot get pregnant. Now, while it is believed, and many women who have had eating disorders in the past and are in childbearing years and wish to have a child have discussed having difficulty getting pregnant due to the years of damage on the behaviors on their body, many women are able to get pregnant. So just because someone has had an eating disorder or currently has an eating disorder does not mean that they cannot get pregnant. Another myth that is out there circulating is that if a woman is struggling with her menstrual cycle due to a result of her eating disorder, that she cannot get pregnant. That, too, is not correct. Just because you're not having a regular menstrual cycle does not mean you are not able to get pregnant. So there can be some surprises, some whoopsies, and some disbelief. So I think it's really important right from the start to dispel those two common myths that I hear about. For most individuals, pregnancy is a joyous time, and it's very nerve-wracking. It's a time for your body to change. And many women enjoy that or relish that, even as they're uncomfortable because they know that they have a young life growing in them and they're excited and, like I said, anxious at the same time. There's a real feeling of uncomfortableness, out of your normal range, especially if it's your first pregnancy, not sure what to expect, not sure what the body changing means, not sure what some of the morning symptoms might be like, that the morning sickness sometimes extends throughout the whole day. It's also a time for nourishment for the fetus, making sure that the baby that is growing is getting enough nutrition. Many women like to extend that to eating for two and like to use the excuse to eat some chocolate and some other foods that unfortunately they like to forbid themselves from when they're not pregnant. However, it's important to make sure that we're aware it's not a time for engaging in binge eating. It's also a time for self-care. Many women really make sure they take care of themselves because they're very consciously concerned that they are growing a life inside of them. They want to make sure that they're sleeping appropriately, getting enough sleep, not overdoing it, not overlifting, not taxing themselves out and overstressing. Self-care already mentioned. And then proper nutrition, making sure that they're eating properly. Many get rid of the caffeine and you're able to, you know, not have any of the alcohol. Many are able to limit some of those overly sugary foods and focus on making sure that they're getting a proper balance of their food groups, again, because they know that they are growing a baby inside. However, for those who struggle with an eating disorder, these are not necessarily the happiest of times. Many of the points that I just discussed are very nerve-wracking and very scary, especially nourishment and self-care. Eating disorder, people who struggle with eating disorders, pregnancy can be especially a time for increased anxiety. And many women who have an eating disorder already have a lot of anxiety. Now we're adding to that. The body changing is extremely scary. There's also oftentimes before the pregnancy feeling out of control with one's body, feeling disconnected with one's body. And now it's totally out of control because there's another life that is, you know, requiring care above and beyond what we're used to, and you know, we're already uncomfortable in our own body. We feel disconnected. Many women with eating disorders are able to report the distortion as looking in a circus mirror. If you're familiar with circus mirrors, you look in them, and how you would normally look is distorted. You might be shorter and wider, and that's how often they view themselves. And now on top of it, we're having that added weight gain because we need it, but yet it's really messing up with some of those eating disorder thoughts. There can be an increased wanting to restrict. Even though we know we need to eat, even though we know that that baby needs our nourishment and our body needs the nourishment, it's very scary and overwhelming. We feel out of control, so those with the eating disorders want to try to control. And what can we control? The amount of our food intake. So there's a lot of work that the pregnant woman with an eating disorder is struggling with on the distortions, on that eating disorder voice that seems to be taunting them throughout the day, and doing the right thing for what they need to be healthy. Some of the distorted thoughts, if you're not familiar with them, oftentimes are not uncommon to hear. I am fat, I am large, I am very big, I am worthless, I am unwanted, I am unworthy, I am unlovable. All focusing on the concern of their weight and their body image. So then on top of that, we have the pregnancy, which compounds it. Probably not too surprising, but many women who have an eating disorder and are pregnant do not tell their obstetrician, their doctor, that they have an eating disorder. A recent study that was done indicated that only 44% reported to their doctor that they had an eating disorder, One of the recommendations that I would encourage is that have a support system or support person that you feel comfortable with. Maybe attend the initial appointment so that you can make sure that the doctor is given an adequate history, whether it be the significant other or whether it be a support system who knows some of the struggles. There's a lot of shame and a lot of secrecy that surround eating disorders, and it's not uncommon that the individual doesn't wish to share that part of it. So if we have a support person with us while we're going to the doctor, that can help. It's so important that the obstetrician, know that the woman has an eating disorder off the bat, because then they can really work on making sure that they're providing the best medical care possible. There are many complications just with eating disorders alone, not even including a pregnancy. I already talked about the circus mirror viewpoint, a lot of negative distorted perceptions of one's body, really not in touch with how their body looks or how much what space they take up. They oftentimes feel that they take up more space than they actually do. There's electrolyte and mineral imbalances, and what that means are the body fluids, such as our blood and urine. Typical electrolytes that are sodium, calcium, potassium, chloride, and magnesium, each of those have very important functions of our body. Our body works really hard to maintain our electrolytes to make sure we have the correct amount. However, if we're working on binging, purging, restricting, not allowing our body to have the nutrients that it requires, then we're going to have an imbalance. So that is a complication just with an eating disorder alone. We also have functional and structural abnormalities of internal organs. What that means is we oftentimes see women who have heart damage, prominently due to the bulimia. The purging is really difficult on the heart. Also see high risk of damage to one's kidneys, overworking to regulate the minerals in the body. We see individuals who struggle with some brain damage. The distorted thought patterns run on. The purging and binging can become addictive-like as part of their normal repertoire of their life. The circulatory system can have some issues. The digestive system, acid reflux, stomach ulcers, esophageal problems. The skin can lose some of its elasticity, and lack of mineral and vitamins can increase chances for osteoporosis. And of course, we have the teeth. Teeth are affected due to the acid from the vomiting, so you can have tooth decay and damage. So those are all complications just by an eating disorder alone, and it sounds very scary and overwhelming. Through treatment, they can be reversed if we can get the individual to be able to manage and combat their eating disorder. However, when we add, we also have severe metabolic alterations. Then you have depression, which is it can be part of the eating disorder. Individuals taking prescription medications can have issues as well with their eating disorder. And then we see quite a bit of alcohol and substance use and abuse with individuals with eating disorders. So those are also complications. Then when we add in the pregnancy and the higher complications with eating disorders, we see that there's high rates of miscarriage, low birth weights. Pre-pregnancy BMI, the body mass index, can play a role in the birth weight of a baby. It's not uncommon if the mom had a low BMI and was in the altered state for their BMI, that they probably will have a low birth weight baby. Low birth weight babies oftentimes have other complications, making sure they can get healthy, making sure their immune systems are developed. Infants with low Apgar scars, which I will cover that in a minute, it's not uncommon to have preterm delivery, so not making it for the whole gestational period. It's not uncommon for pregnant women with eating disorders to end up having cesarean deliveries. The bodies struggle to be able to have the vaginal delivery. Then there's also something called intrauterine growth restriction. And that's when a baby is diagnosed if they appear smaller than to be expected. So if you look at an ultrasound is done and the baby is below the 10th percentile for their gestational age, then there's going to be concern that the baby is going to be very small. And sometimes they come out normal size, but it's an indication to the doctors that there's something that is keeping the baby from growing properly. If the woman hadn't yet shared with the doctor about her eating disorder, this might be a time when the doctor might be questioning it. If the ultrasound is indicating that the baby is smaller than what would be expected, then they're going to try to figure out what the problem is. So this is oftentimes when the eating disorder can get brought up. You're following along with me on the slides. I'm now on slide 10. And this is just an example of the Apgar scores. I just wanted to put that in there. It had been, my baby is almost 17, so it's been a while since I dealt with Apgar scores. But looking at what is considered a very healthy and what's an unhealthy baby. And you, of course, want to get the higher points possible. So you'd want the color of the baby to be pink and heart rate to be more than 100 per minute. Respiratory would be good, crying, regular breathing. Muscle tone would be, the limbs would be flexed. And reflex irritability, grimace and cough or sneeze. So you want to have that 7 to 10 point range. Excellent is, a baby is in excellent condition. When we're compromised with the effects of an eating disorder, it's not uncommon for us to be in that lower than 5 points or 5 to 7 points. So we want to make sure that the baby feels the stress, and the baby feels the stress during the delivery from its pregnancy, and it'll show up at once it's been delivered. So for doctors, there are three warning signs that will cause an obstetrician to be concerned about the pregnancy. And it may not be when, again, may not have known about the eating disorder, but even if they have the eating disorder history, this would be a couple of things that come up. Failure to gain weight appropriately during 2 months of the doctor's visits. So if the woman isn't appropriately gaining weight for where they should be, that's going to be a red flag for the doctor, and they're going to want to investigate that. If we're restricting our food intake, if we're binging, purging, then that might come up at that time if we haven't shared that already. There's also a diagnosis of hyperemesis gravidum. I've been practicing that word. And what that is, it's characterized by severe nausea, vomiting, weight loss, and electrolyte disturbance. So it's more severe and beyond morning sickness. Mild cases can be treated with dietary changes, rest, antacids. More severe cases, though, can require a stay in the hospital so the mother can receive fluids, nutrition through an IV. It's really important that the mother does not take any medication to solve this problem without first consulting with the doctor. We want to make sure that the patient is getting the proper IV nutrients and fluids that are important for them. It's kind of been described to me as 24/7 morning sickness. So the mother is so sick. There is a way that some individuals, especially those who struggle with the bulimia nervosa, the binging and purging, having this diagnosis, it can be a way to rationalize the eating disorder behaviors. And I'm not saying it's malicious. I'm not saying it's necessarily subconscious. But if I have this diagnosis, then maybe I can continue binging and purging because no one's going to figure it out because they think that this is a pregnancy medical condition. So that's also a good reason to know about the eating disorder history, because we can explore that and look at that and see, are you engaging in the behaviors? Is there something we can do to help you limit and decrease those behaviors? And then, of course, the third warning sign would be the history of an eating disorder. And you can have, you know, you can be in your recovery or not have engaged in behaviors for quite a while, and having that pregnancy and having this weight gain and having this body changing can be something for some women that can trigger their eating disorder right back. So even if it's a history and not ongoing and current eating disorder, it's good to know about it so that the doctor is aware. So as of right now for treatment, there's no set evidence-based standard to treatment. So we can't walk into a therapist and say, this is what I'm struggling with. I have my eating disorder, I have my pregnancy, I have my distorted thoughts, and I have body image. Well, what are we going to do to work on this? All right, so we don't yet have evidence-based standards of saying, this is what we do in these situations. Yeah, we're working on it. We may need to see treatment team members more often than a pregnant woman without an eating disorder. So maybe the doctor visits would be more frequent. Maybe we would see our therapist more often. So we're going to talk about the different members of the treatment team shortly. There's no reliable laboratory indicator for an eating disorder, so we really require and need and rely on the self-disclosure, which I've already talked about. There's so much shame and secrecy around eating disorders, it can be really difficult for someone to be able to be open and talk about it. That's why if we have a support person that maybe we can bring along to help us, that would be great. I encourage honesty and open honesty by the patient as much as possible, and I think it's so important when we're working with individuals, whether it's a family member, whether it's ourselves, whether it's a client, that we work with them where that individual is at. How can I help you today? What can I do to help you get through this part? Because it's going to be a constant set of hurdles that we're going to have to work on throughout that whole gestational period. And then it's important to have careful questioning by the provider. I think that there's been a push in the medical community to have more training to understand eating disorders, to understand what stepping on that scale and looking at that number can do to an individual. So if we're able to put that up front for our practitioner, then that may make that much easier for us to go in for the appointments. Not always, but it's a start. If you're following along on the slides, I'm on slide 13. And I wanted to talk about what is our team, what is the treatment team, and what does that look like, and who's on it, and what roles do they play. I think that this can be very confusing for an individual to know who to talk to, what to say, and how to say it. So we have four key members of our multidisciplinary treatment team for when we're pregnant with an eating disorder. And the first is our mental health clinician. Then we have the obstetrician, the dietitian, and our psychiatrist, if we're on medication. So the mental health clinician, we have so many different levels of licensing that we can have these days. We can have a master level licensed therapist. We can have a PhD or a PsyD. We can have a social worker licensed. And so there's many different ways, many different variables or levels of therapists that we could have be our mental health clinician. I think what's most important, not necessarily the letters, the degrees that follow the clinician's name, but what's most important is that the clinician knows what eating disorders are and how to treat eating disorders. So if you're in an area that has eating disorder therapists, that's great. If you have no eating disorder therapist, which some communities do not, then hopefully your therapist can work with you, or they can help find any sort of therapist that they can consult with during the term of your pregnancy. It's really important to work on patient on boundaries. I think especially for the eating disorder individual, we're already discomforted by uncomfortable having our body change. When one is pregnant, it's often common for people to want to touch you. And that, even if you don't have any disorder, that can be very uncomfortable and very stressful and anxiety-provoking. Who is a stranger wanting to touch my stomach? And I think it's good to be able to work with your therapist on how to set those boundaries, what you can say to feel comfortable, saying, I really don't feel comfortable with you touching me. Other thing is that people seem to find pregnant women to be the open gate for them to give you every kind of feedback and tip that they've ever wanted to share, which you don't necessarily need to know or want to know. They'll comment on you're carrying too high, you're carrying too low with the baby weight, that you're gaining weight too fast. If there's a way for you to work with your therapist to put a filter on that you take in the feedback, you work on deflecting the feedback from others, and just take the feedback from your treatment team. That's going to be a difficult hurdle to do, but it can help you in the long run as you're going through your pregnancy and navigating this and the changes you're going to have. We want your therapist to be your team coordinator, so to speak. We want them to be in charge of the whole treatment team. Probably your therapist will be the one that you see the most often, one, maybe two times a week, depending upon how you're doing, how you're managing, what some of your other stressors are. So we want them to make sure, we want to make sure that our therapist is the one that's keeping everyone in the loop and communicating with everybody. In order for our therapist to be able to do that, it is important that we make sure that we have signed all the necessary releases of information that are out there, because we want to make sure that our therapist is following protocol, making sure that HIPAA is being, our privacy and confidentiality acts are being followed through. And so if we have releases of information for our therapist to be able to talk to the rest of our treatment team, then they can navigate that for us. That doesn't mean we're not going to have our own voice, because you will. But this way we have one person who's in charge of the treatment team. And they're probably the ones who's going to know you the best, know the individual the best. We want to make sure that the treatment team members are on the same page, and that's something that the therapist can work on doing. It's important that we don't have one person saying, you know, you need to be increasing, you know, maybe your protein, and someone else saying, no, decrease it. So the last thing we need right now are mixed messages, because we already talked about how anxious and stressed out the young woman is with the who's pregnant with the eating disorder. So we want to make sure that everyone's on the same page. We want to make sure there's a sharing of information, updates, concerns, as well as medication updates. So this way we're going to have the mental health clinician be the one that you see the most, knows you the most, and hopefully will be the one in charge of the treatment team. Then we have our doctor, okay? Does the doctor want the communication, or would the doctor prefer that one of his or her nurses receive this communication? It's helpful for the doctor to be aware of the eating disorder behaviors that can undermine treatment, such as, do you engage in laxative use, diet pills, binging, purging, restricting, over-exercising, not drinking fluids. Those are very important for the doctor to be aware of so that they can help you manage that and also make sure that your body and the baby is getting the needs met. It's really good for the doctor to not share your weight. I would think that the blind weigh-ins are the best, even throughout your pregnancy. And talking in ranges is always helpful. You're right on range for where you need to be. Or, you know what, we're really concerned because you're not meeting the goals. Like I mentioned earlier, one of the concerns, warning flags, is not having appropriate weight gain in two consecutive months. So that would be a way to be able to talk about it. Numbers can be very distressing and can cause a lot of anguish, anxiety, and frustration for the individual, which then can help those eating disorder behaviors escalate, which is not what we need right now. So best not to share the weight with the patient. To help keep the team informed as to the status of the pregnancy. So let the rest of the team know about the medical components that the rest of the team would not have knowledge of. It's good for the doctor to be included on eating disorder behaviors, current and past. It'd be helpful for the woman who is pregnant with the eating disorder to be able to share that. As mentioned previously, if they're not able to share it, then their support person or hopefully the therapist has that information. So make sure that we have that flow of communication. We have optional sources for that communication to be shared. Also medications. What medications are currently being taken? All the medications, not just picking and choosing. It's not uncommon for us to learn that someone's taking different meds that we weren't initially told about, and it's really important that the doctor knows. Some of them cross the blood barrier. They can help get into the baby's circulation, and some of them are blocked. So we want to make sure the doctor is aware, whether it's a prescribed medication, whether it's over-the-counter meds, whether it's herbs. Very important for the doctor to know everything. So that's often a good thing to be able to work on prior to the first doctor appointment or the second doctor appointment, compiling your list, or bringing in all the bottles if that's easier too. dietitians, these guys are very important. I think it's very helpful to have a dietitian to help monitor the food intake, to help talk about the struggles you're having with your meal plan, with managing the food. Someone that can relate to you and give you that nutritional component that the other members of the team won't have as thorough of a background in. It's very important to have a dietitian that is an eating disorder dietitian. Again, not very common. There's not a rotation, my understanding is, for eating disorders in school. I know that some individuals do an extra rotation or will do a sub-eating disorder rotation. So either get the referral from your therapist, your doctor, your psychiatrist. One website is eatright.org, and you can put in their specialty, but it's important whatever names come up, pop up in your area. You can put in the specialty, and you can click on eating disorders, and then you can put in your zip code, and it can compile a list. Even with that list, you still want to be able to ask, what is your experience working with an eating disorder? Do you work with eating disorders regularly? What is your experience working with someone with an eating disorder who is pregnant? Okay. And then I think it's really important to know insurance coverage. Insurance coverage is not usually covered for dietitians. That is usually an out-of-pocket expense. Some do sliding scales, some do not. Historically, I think diabetes is pretty much one of the only coverages for insurance to see a dietitian. However, I do know that many individuals have consulted with their insurance company because of the eating disorder, because of the medical, and maybe adding in that pregnancy. So I definitely encourage you to talk to your insurance company to see if you can get coverage for your dietitian, but just also be aware that you might be paying out of pocket for the dietitian. With that said, the dietitian is an extremely instrumental member of this treatment team. They can work with monitoring your weight along with your doctor, making sure that they can modify the meal plans to get your nutritional and mineral needs that your body requires as it's changing during the pregnancy. Someone that understands your eating disorder behaviors around food, and so they can help with monitoring those behaviors and working with you on decreasing the behaviors as well. And then also communicating your status so they can help let you know how you're doing, and also with your treatment team to share with your treatment team how you're doing, what your struggles are, so that everybody, again, is on board. Communication and knowledge is a really good thing, although it can feel really intrusive for the woman, especially when we have that secrecy around the behaviors. We're trying to break down some of those walls, knowing that it could be difficult. And then we have the psychiatrist. If you're on psychiatric meds, very important to make sure that the psychiatrist is aware that you're pregnant and that what ED behaviors you are engaging in or have engaged in the past. They need to know the medications that you're on, that you're being prescribed during pregnancy. I oftentimes encourage, even though we have the mental health clinician being your lead treatment team member, I often encourage your obstetrician and your psychiatrist, to speak about the medications themselves or their nurses. We want to make sure that they're on the same page and understand what the meds are for. Sometimes a medical doctor isn't necessarily all that up to date on psychiatric meds and vice versa, just because it's not their area of specialty and expertise. So we can get the two doctors to talk and make sure that they're on the same page. I think that goes far and helps out immensely throughout the pregnancy. And again, important to update communication, provide the rest of the treatment team the communication. So they're very important as well, and we want to make sure that the medication component is taken care of. I am now on slide 18, and I do want to stress this, and I haven't mentioned it earlier. I wanted to talk about the various complications and treatment first. But what we want to work on or be aware of is that sometimes that pregnancy can, like one of the articles I was reading, flip that switch, turn off that eating disorder thinking. sometimes having the woman be aware of the baby and the pregnancy can really, at times, put aside that eating disorder thoughts, eating disorder behaviors during the pregnancy and have it be the focus on the baby, the distraction, if you will. Sometimes having it be that, you know, I have to eat because of the baby. I have to keep my food in my system because of the baby. So it can be a really good motivating factor, even though I've been talking a lot about the anxiety and the body image. For the select few, this can really be helpful and promising and kind of check the eating disorder, you know, at the door, so to speak. And during the pregnancy, for some, it's not an issue. So just because someone is struggling with eating disorders or eating disorder in the past and is pregnant doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have a really tough pregnancy or have all the eating disorder thoughts just really bombard them. For those, it can be that shift to focus on the unborn baby and focus on the needs and not have to engage in the eating disorder behaviors, which many report is so nice when that happens. We then have post-pregnancy, which is on slide 19. And it's important to be aware for postpartum, for post-pregnancy. If an individual has struggled with depression prior to their pregnancy, then she is more susceptible to having postpartum depression after the pregnancy. So we want to make sure, again, that that treatment team has an awareness and is talking and communicating so that we can work on post-baby to be able to assess how you're doing, how you're managing with the depression thoughts. You know, after you have that baby, as rampant as those hormones were during pregnancy, they're just as much, can be chaotic after the pregnancy, too. So we want to be able to work on recognizing, being able to assess, being able to alert and say, you know what, I'm concerned. Let's make sure we get you this depression focused on. Again, body image seems to be a theme. It's a theme with eating disorders. Now we've added the pregnancy. It's been a theme the whole time. We want to work on post-baby body. What does that mean? What does that look like? I recommend not reading any tabloids. You know, you read about the starlets out there who've had a baby and lost all their weight in no time at all and can fit in their pre-pregnancy jeans. We want to make sure that we're doing what's right for our body and for our baby, right? So it's not a rush. I know that if those eating disorder thoughts and negative body are plaguing us, we're going to want to lose that weight right away and get back to our post-baby body. But we want to make sure that dietitian is still a huge component and work with the dietitian on making sure that we're doing what we need best for our body. Because not only do we have us, but we need to be able to work with and learn about our nutrition and the baby's nutrition. If the mom is going to breastfeed post-baby, it is important that the mom has enough nutrition in their system to be able to supply the baby with the nutrition that they need. It needs to keep that nutrition up going. It can't just stop because the baby's been here. So working with the dietitian, following our meal plan, having our fluids is so important to make sure that the baby gets its needs met, as well as us, so that we have the energy to take care of the baby, to work on combating that depression, and to make sure that we have energy and nutritional needs. It's important post-pregnancy that there's education received about feeding. How often are we supposed to feed the baby? How long do we feed the baby? What are hunger cues for the baby, and what are signs that the baby is full? Some women who struggled with eating disorders in the past have talked about how having a child can be difficult. Having a baby who can't speak yet can be difficult because we want to make sure that we're not restricting the baby and the child's food intake because of our own eating disorder distorted thoughts. We want to make sure that we're supplying enough nutritional needs so that they have enough energy and nutrition and minerals that their body requires. One of the areas, too, that I want to make sure we're working on throughout, because I talked a lot about cognitive distortions, hopefully the treatment team, primarily this would probably be the therapist and the dietitian, The other two docs would be playing a part in it as well, but we want to be working on recognizing distorted thoughts, recognizing thoughts that are eating disorder thoughts. So there's going to be a lot of that cognitive behavioral therapy, it's called, throughout the whole treatment system that during the pregnancy with the eating disorder patient, making sure that we're hitting it head on so that there's that awareness and then that ability to work on change. So that is the end, wrapping it up. I believe we're going to have some announcements made. But thank you.
All right, thank you. And to help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Question 1. This session has provided me with a better understanding of how to manage pregnancy and eating disorders. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, or star 4 for strongly disagree. Again, the question this session has provided me with a better understanding of how to manage pregnancy and eating disorders. We'll allow just a few more moments to allow everyone a chance to signal. And question number 2, this session educated me on how to address possible dangers and symptoms that can arise during pregnancy. Star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, or star 4 for strongly disagree. Once again, this session has educated me on how to address possible dangers and symptoms that can arise during pregnancy. Question 3, overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following. Star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, or star 4 for strongly disagree. Once again, overall, this session has met my expectations. On to question 4, I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you would recommend this program to others, or star 2 if you would not recommend this program to others. And question 5, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with an eating disorder. Star 1, I am an individual with an eating disorder. Star 2, I am a family member of someone with an eating disorder. Star 3, I am a health professional. Or 4, other. And thank you all for your responses. We will now move on to the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open, and we ask that you please state your name before posing your question. Once again, that is star followed by the number 1, and we will pause for a moment to assemble the queue. And there are no signals over the phones at this time. However, to allow everyone a chance to signal, once again, that is star followed by the number 1. It And there are still no questions from the phones. I will turn the call back to our moderator for any closing remarks.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone for attending. A special thank you to Dr. Denise Dyer for providing us with such wonderful insights today. If anyone on the call has specific questions about any of the therapies discussed today, please contact the Eating Disorder team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Also, be sure to mark your calendars to join our Eating Disorder Awareness Seminar next month on Tuesday, June 25th at 1 p.m. Eastern. That's noon Central or 10 a.m. Pacific time. Thanks so much.
And this does conclude today's conference. Once again, we would like to thank everyone for your participation and have a wonderful day.